Welcome to the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation Podcast with Steve Warren and the coach, Greg Kennedy.
Coming up today, with a week left in the season, who exactly is your Ottawa Senators MVP? Your Ottawa Senator Untouchables going into the offseason. Claude Giroux is your Masterton Trophy nominee. We know that. If we agree you can't keep Chychrun and Shabbat, who exactly are you keeping? The house cleaning begins. The Sens have fired longtime pro scouts Jim Clark and Rob Murphy and former Senator Bobby Ryan parts company with the Sens podcast he was working with after some critical comments about women's sports. That and more coming up today here on the program. No, not missed. I mean, it just seems so absurd to even talk about. Though until last night, they had a chance. It's like that that meme that we saw in Dumb and Dumber of Jim Carrey going, "So you're telling me there's a chance?" Yeah. Not likely. And so I didn't make a big deal out of it. Yeah, they were mathematically'd, I say, in the loss to the New Jersey Devils on Saturday night. And why don't we start there? Because I think a lot of people were excited once again. Though I'm getting to a stage now, writing for the Hockey News, doing this podcast, how many more times do we have to have that conversation going back to DJ Smith or many times from the players? If we keep playing like we did in that third period, we're going to be fine. If we get a couple of so many ifs and, you know, what's that thing about your aunt and your uncle? And you know what, in 2024, that idiom probably should be put away, I guess. But the ifs, I don't think anybody wants to hear them anymore because we've been talking about them for a long time. Yeah, if you do that, but you don't do that. And so it is what it is.
Yeah, and another bad start, right? We joke about that too. Do they have to fall behind 2-0 in every game they play? They did flash stat up on the screen there at one point that the Ottawa Senators have allowed a goal on the first shot of a game 6 times. This season and have allowed a goal on the second shot of the game 12 times. And then last night, that 12 became 13. So just as bad as any other night. They're now up to 19 times giving up a goal on the first or second shot of a game. The first period, again, was just boring, dull, dumb, poor play. It was just another terrible start. And at home, too. Like, those ones hurt even more, I think.
And we've seen that act before where you go, okay, if they play like that, I don't think anybody denies that anymore. Like, this team right now is capable of being a playoff team. What they lack is consistency. Consistency within a game, being awesome for 60 minutes, focused, doing the right things, playing the right way for 60 minutes. And that applies to things from a seasonal performance as well. Like, look what this team's doing. Like, you know, last we got together, they had a 5-game winning streak going. Now they're on a 3-game losing slide. It's just been like a toilet seat for the last 3 months. They can't get any level of consistency going. And maybe that's part of the sins of youth in that, you ride the wave. The emotion works for you sometimes and it works against you and the others.
Well, I brought this point up once before and we discussed it briefly, and I'm wondering, again, it makes me wonder, like, is it too late for some of these guys, Steve? I'm not saying it's too late for them to learn a couple lessons and play well briefly, but is it too late for these guys for all these messages to sink in, for everything to sink in once and for all, and for every one of them to be able to show up and play a 60-minute game? Like, it just seems that some of these guys, it just might be too late. Their habits are now too ingrained, and they might play well for a little while. They might play well for a period, or as we've seen, a few games in a row, but then those things creep back in again. It's like your golf game. Suddenly you're hot and you're on fire for, you know, a round or two, and then you go back to slicing it into the woods every second tee shot. So it's just, it seems to me that some of these guys, I think it is, it's too late for them, and they are what they are, I guess, is the way to put it.
Yeah, and I think you evaluate it all, but you also look at that goaltending. We've talked about it ad nauseum now, and I've been of the opinion that I'm not saying these guys are going to win a Vezina or that they're necessarily the answer long term. All I've said all along is it's really hard to fully, properly evaluate goalies when the defense is so inconsistent and sometimes a tire fire, the goalie finds it unpredictable. They're uncomfortable. They lose confidence. And I've always said, show me a bad goalie. I'll show you a team in front of them that's playing poorly. I'm not saying you can take a junior B goalie and stick him in the NHL. But once you've elevated yourself as a goaltender into the top 100 goalies alive with all your angles and your reaction times and such, I feel like a lot of those goalies are going to be interchangeable. Aiden Hill is your Stanley Cup defending champion, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. But my point is, I think I'm moving now into a stage, because with Forsberg and Korpisalo, I've said that. It's like, I don't know. Are they terrible, or is it just the defense in front of them? And I still think that's a factor in evaluating any goalie. But, man, watching Korpisalo get burned in that 6-0 loss to Florida, that Lundell goal from a bad angle. And this isn't a time in a game. It was a 2-0 lead for the Florida Panthers. And Lundell is down below the goal line, and he beats Korpisalo off with a puck ramped in off his back. It's the second time he's done it in a month and a half on the guy. So you'd think for two reasons, three reasons. Korpisalo is trying to win over the fans who've pretty much bailed on him at this stage of the game. Should be some focus there. It's a 2-0 lead for Florida. That third goal is going to be a killer. Should be some focus there. And the fact that it's Lundell in the corner for almost the same insane angle on the same spot of the ice, you'd think, yeah, he might try that. And nope. Either lack of focus, attention to detail, that's a red flag. And I wonder now, I think I'm moving into that stage now, that is more than just poor defense in front of Jonas Korpisalo.
Yeah, you brought up the stats last show, and we talked about it, the fact that poor teams tend to have poor goaltending and vice versa. And it doesn't matter. You can switch teams a la Cam Talbot and Jonas Korpisalo, two good examples, who look good one place and look bad the next place, or and vice versa. But I brought up the fact that this team, I think no matter who plays goal for the Ottawa Senators, they lead the league in allowing terrible goals, at least one or two every game. And that below the goal line one is it's becoming more and more common now. Let's face facts. More guys now shoot that puck there and try to score that goal. We've seen Drake Batherson do it a couple times. I mean, Do you fault goaltenders and the style they play now? Remember, goalie used to stand up straight and he'd have his arm on the outside of that post and there wouldn't be that hole there. So do you fault the goaltenders in the style they play now, or do you credit the shooters because now they've realized this is a weakness and I could score there? I think the fact that it happens more and more in the National Hockey League now, that shooters see it and think it and try it, factors into this. But as you said, it's a guy who did it to you once before. Like, what happened to the old fashioned, I keep a book on guys, right? You keep a book on all these shooters in the league and you know what their tendencies are. And you allow one to this guy from that angle off your head one game and then off your back the next game. That to me is on the goaltender, regardless of goaltending styles, regardless of players being smarter. That one is totally 100% on Korpisalo. Should not have happened, period.
In my opinion, it's a fundamentals thing. I think he's doing the right thing there in the new butterfly world, in that if that puck is passed to the front of the net really fast, someone who's in front can, maybe whack that thing home. If you're like in a standing position hugging the post like they used to have back in the day, The position that the goalie has hugging the post while on his knees allows for that quick carom, and then your left pad is in a great spot to take care of any shot that might be in front. So, what it is a fundamental issue. Like, he's bending forward. If he's got a straight up posture, it's almost impossible to ramp that one in. Although Columbus did it the other night, there was absolutely no sliver at all ramped off the side of the goalie's mask for just a second. And the collision with the puck to mask moved the mask enough for it to slide in. So it can happen. That's a one in a million shot. I don't know. Go have a look at that. It was Marchenko for Columbus who did it from behind the net. Go have a look at that. Make that your internet homework. It's a beauty. But I think that was the big thing with it's either inattention, cutting corners. And if you're cutting corners on that, what else are we not noticing where you're cutting corners, or maybe mentally tapped out or distracted? I don't know, but it was a red flag for me to see that. As we move on, though, we got a week left in the season now, And again, the Sens are riding another three-game losing slide, and they're getting ready for, as we record this, the Washington Capitals on Sunday night on the road as they start a three-game road trip. Who exactly would be your Ottawa Senators MVP? It came up this week because Claude Giroux was given the Masterton Trophy nomination for the Ottawa Senators this year, and I think that's a good choice. And then it got to the next thing along the line was, okay, who's the MVP of this team exactly? Because usually Masterton Trophy winners, I know there's the official designation, but it usually goes to a solid older veteran player who's been a good soldier for a very long time. It goes to someone who's dealt with adversity in their lives or coming off a big major injury or illness. That's usually who it goes to. But Claude Giroux, I thought, was a good choice. But who is the MVP of this team? Because there aren't many Masterton Trophy winners who are also in the MVP discussion as Giroux is.
I think if we discussed this a month ago, and I think we did, and we were both in agreement that it was Claude Giroux, but he hasn't had the great, the last month or so has not been that good. That was his first goal in a long time against New Jersey. I got to say it's Brady Tkachuk, isn't it? He's consistent, game in, game out. He shows up and does his thing, whether the rest of them follow him and get on board the bus and want to play the same way or not is on them more than it's on him. He does his thing night in and night out. I think that Brady Tkachuk is your MVP.
I put it out there in a Dunrobin Distillery Seven Seals Whiskey web poll on Twitter, and I put out the choices of Brady Tkachuk, Claude Giroux, Tim Stützle, and I didn't put Jake Sanderson there, and I got quite a bit of pushback. Friend of the show, Ian Mendez, for one. Sorry?
He'd be the only other one to consider in my mind.
Yeah. So Ian Mendez, friend of the show, chimed in and said, no, he's my MVP, not just a guy who belongs on the pseudo podium that I put together first, second, third, but he thought that he was actually the Sens MVP for his consistency and such. I don't have him there yet. He is on my Mount Rushmore. He'd be my number four guy, like you say. I had Claude Giroux still just because of the intangibles. The guy is always chipping in offensively in big moments, but he's also been a mentor. Watch that guy at practice, mentoring younger players, and his commitment to defense is something that can't be ignored as well. I think Tkachuk has something like a 6-point lead on him, something like that. And Giroux hasn't had nearly the power play time that Tkachuk has. So reverse those. I think you probably see a reversal in points and such. It's close. After watching Tkachuk and his 16-hit performance against the New Jersey Devils and the way he drag the team into the fight. I'm getting tired of that one. It's getting a bit cliche, but that's what he did in the third period. It's very close because I was feeling MVP love for Tkachuk after that one. So, Tim Stützle was one though, who was getting almost no love, which I found interesting because I think this time last year, he would be getting tons.
I think that the knock against Stützle is it seems that he doesn't finish all those chances, right? But we lose sight of the fact that he is so good that he creates so many chances for himself. How many times have you seen him dash up the ice, split the D, and just lose control of the puck or just miss off a deke or something when he gets on top of the goalie or shoot it wide when he gets a 1T in a back door or something? Tim Stützle seems to miss more glorious scoring opportunities or miss finishing off a great dash than the others do. And it's simply because he's skilled enough to do those things in the first place to get himself into that position. And you lose sight of the fact that, wow, this guy is pretty skilled. He's probably, he is. He's the highest skilled guy on this team with what he can do with the puck and the offensive zone and off the rush, et cetera. So I think he probably doesn't get quite the same amount of love because of that, because people think of the times where, he could have, 35 goals. He could have 85 points. And they kind of skip over the fact that, he's doing pretty well anyway. He's got some pretty good stats anyway.
It is, but it's the assists are right on par with last year, but man, the goal total is down. It's not a seems to be down. It is down. Like he had 39 goals last year. He's going to get 18 this year. So that is goals. Yeah, That's right. The power play goals have absolutely been. Is it like one? Does he have one power play goal, one or two all season long, which is crazy because he's on all of them. You know, I feel like Parker Kelly, if you stuck him on the power play from start to finish, every first unit power play, he could accomplish that as well. So as the highest paid player on the team and the chances that he gets, yeah, he's got to finish more. No question about that. And that certainly goes into people's thoughts when asked about who the MVP of this team is. Further to that, as we kind of open things up, like who are your untouchables now? All those guys we talked about in the MVP discussion are untouchables. But is there anybody else on this team left that you would consider to be an untouchable? Is it a Pinto? Is it a Batherson? Someone like that?
I think Batherson, I can see Batherson being traded because his contract is so team friendly. But on the other side of the coin, his contract is so team friendly that maybe he's an untouchable. Like he's had a really, really good season. Statistically speaking, he's improved so much, especially without the puck and away from the puck and defensive zone. I think you could put Batherson in that untouchable group. So that's Tkachuk and Stützle, Giroux, Batherson. I think that Matthew Joseph probably is or should be. And I say that because he's the type of player that they want. He's the type of player that they're looking for, that they say they need, the 200-foot guy, the consummate professional, the show-up-every-night, work-hard guy. That's what he is. So I think for that reason alone, he's untouchable. Obviously, Jake Sanderson is untouchable. I don't know that any other defenseman is untouchable. Any other defenseman beyond Jake's, maybe Artem Zub. So let's say Zub and Sanderson are untouchable. So the rest of the blue line, I think you could trade any of them. I think Greg and Pinto, unfortunately, they could be traded. I'm not saying that I would. I'm not saying that I'm looking to, but I'm saying that if a big deal comes along and you really see they get into an opportunity with it's a player that you really like, it could end up costing you a Pinto or a Greg. So for that reason, they are probably not untouchable, but I think you probably include a couple of them on your list. But I think that's about
well, the Batherson one. I think the Batherson was the one I wanted to most address.
Yeah.
And I don't have too many beyond that. I think I have Tkachuk, Sanderson, Stützle, Batherson, and I'm probably willing to listen on everybody else. And the reason, and I think, again, Batherson is a controversial one because I think a lot of people kind of fell out of love with him in the last couple of years and maybe the first part of this season. But I see since the coaching change, I see a different player. And when you hear Jacques Martin publicly referring to that guy as a guy that reminds him of Marian Hossa, Hall of Famer, many times in the Cup Final. Like, we all love Marian Hossa. Everybody does. Tremendous hockey player. And when you hear Martin talking about Batherson in those terms, I suspect that he's done some things to try and build up that guy's confidence. And he is just flying out there.
Attention truck enthusiasts, are you ready to experience the power, performance, and innovation of a legendary vehicle? Look no further than the 2023 Ford F-150 at Jim K. Ford. We have incredible deals and financing options tailored just for you. Visit Jim K. Ford today and experience the thrill of driving the best-selling truck in Canada, the 2023 Ford F-150. Visit us at 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans or at jimkford.com.
At Jim K. Ford Lincoln, we say yes!
Hey, if you like a nice drink with family and friends, I'd like to recommend a nice bottle of Beaver's Dram Premium Canadian Whiskey. Imagine a nice whiskey with less bite and more flavor that's soft and warm with subtle flavors of orange and dark chocolate and a hint of sherry in there too. Pick up a bottle of Seven Seals Beaver's Dram Premium Canadian Whiskey today at the LCBO or order online at DunrobinDistilleries.com. If we agree now that Shabbat and Chychrun probably aren't both staying, I wonder, how are you applying things? Like, how are you looking at things in the off season? I know we've talked about this a little before, but Shabbat's played a little bit. I don't know. He also looks like a guy who's been better under Jacques Martin. Yeah, I just and you know, maybe a more appropriate ice time. Jacques Martin has always been concerned about fitness and having the legs out there, going back to his exercise bikes after the game routine. I think he's his numbers have been time and ice wise a little better, and that goes to Jake Sanderson and Jacob Chychrun being here as well. But no, he's been a better looking player in the last month or two, although injury prone, which factors in the discussion here. So Shabbat or Chychrun, are you keeping one? Are you keeping both? Are you keeping neither?
Well, I think that regardless of how we feel about them as players, I think that salary structure wise, I think that the makeup of left shots and right shots, and not necessarily left shots, right sides, sorry, guys that can play left and guys that can play right very well, I think that factors into this. And the bottom line is you can't keep or should not be keeping both of them because you're keeping Sanderson. And to keep the two of them who both really are that their very best on the left side means you can only keep one of them. Which one you're going to move, I think, comes down to a couple factors. The first one being, well, gee, what kind of offers are you getting? You know, what's out there? Who's interested in them? I think the other thing that factors into this is a couple of early contract discussions with Jacob Chychrun about his next deal, when you can start talking to him soon and maybe get a feel for what it's going to cost you if he's the one that you're going to keep. The other thing that factors in is Thomas Chabot has a no trade kicking in. I think it's July 1st that his no trade kicks in. So I think those who wants them and what can you get for them? What kind of money is Chychrun going to want? And Shabbat's no trade clause. I think those three things are the key factors here beyond everything else. Like sitting down and evaluating the two of them, I think you're okay no matter which one you keep, to be quite honest with you. I can't see one of them going somewhere in a trade. It's not like Chara and Redden. We're not going to be sitting here 6 months later going, oh my God, I can't believe we let Chara go. We kept Redden. That was dumb. You know, I can't see that happening. So I really think that it won't matter in the bigger picture because Sanderson's ahead of both of them in my mind. So it won't matter in the bigger picture which one you give up. There'll be no 2020 hindsight later. So I think the other things factor in more so than any evaluation you may have.
I'm wide open to moving both, but wow. my blueprint would be to keep one, and that would depend on what the trade market was asking for. You know, I think Chychrun would probably be easier to move just because he's got another year left at a very reasonable price tag, and then you go from there. Whereas Shabbat, you know, and yes, he does have a no trade, but it's not a deal breaker because it's got that limited 10 team thing, so they can still deal him. It just becomes more limited with the number of trade partners you have come this summer. I think both guys can fit on this team. Like, they're both comfortably within your top six on this team. I want them on the team. They'd be great. But you have to factor in the salary cap and what the value of a player is and what they're delivering. Shabbat at 4 more years at $8 million. Is that player going to deliver that to you for the next 4 years? And now we factor in, and again, I acquiesce to the fact that he's been better lately, for sure, particularly under Jacques Martin, but he has been injury prone. He's had four stints now on the sideline. He's missed 33 games this year. Interesting that we thought Chychrun would be the guy that we worry about from a health perspective, but he's been one of the few guys in the entire team that have played every game. So you have to factor in the injury thing and the salary, and that changes the dynamic. And then you think about Chychrun. Well, there's a guy that, first of all, does he want to? Like, he's got to sign an extension here in the next year, and you're asking him to forego the riches of unrestricted free agency. So he's not going to come cheap, even though there might be a hometown discount here. So that's a factor as well. What do you want to pay this guy exactly? And I think that, I don't think there's any Sens fan who would say their expectations for Jacob Chychrun the day he arrived for the player they thought they were getting versus the player that he's been for the last year? I don't think anybody's saying that he's met those expectations. Do you?
No, you're bang on. You know what? I think he's been more offensively than I thought he was. He's much more, I don't know if dynamic is the right word, because Shabbat tries so hard to jump into the play. He tries to lead the rush. He does those things as well. I just think that Jacob Chychrun has been just much more successful. That's the only way to look at it. Like, it's not like Shabbat's not trying. It's not like he doesn't try to sneak down the back door. It's not like he doesn't lead rushes. It's not like he doesn't carry the puck in the offensive zone. Chychrun has just been so much more successful, it seems. I mean, statistically, they're about the same, are they not, at points per game and goals per game? Yeah. Chychrun brings you a lot more on the power play as far as a shooter goes. Shabbat brings you more in the power play as far as manning the top of the umbrella. But yeah, bottom line, Chychrun has not been quite the savior or quite the super stud that you would have thought he was going to be when the trade was made, to answer your original question.
Yeah, so I'm open. I think, again, I'd like to keep one and then see how it goes, but I'm open to the idea of both of them moving on, because I think you're in a situation where, yeah, I mean, they're both delivering what Jake Sanderson, I think, is going to continue to get better at. I think Sanderson's ahead of them in, well, most every way. So you've got that guy already, the guy that's a puck mover, that's going to anchor your power play. And now you've got two more guys like that, which is good, which is awesome. But, you know, if they're going to be $8 million plus, I don't know what Chychrun will come in at. And long term, I don't know that they're the right ingredient on top of everything else as well. So I really feel like you could probably get away with Jake Sanderson, Zub, you know, hopefully Tyler Kleven comes up and delivers some hardcore, right, you know, physical play. Keep one, sure. But I'm keeping the door open as well because of the price tags these guys have.
Yeah. And the biggest thing, as we both said, the biggest thing is, well, what are you going to get? You know, what are you looking for in the market? You know, and that's what it comes down to. What is the demand of your trade partner? And that's going to influence this more than anything. Is what, if I trade this guy, what can I get? If I trade that guy, what can I get? And it wouldn't surprise me if the league is probably split right down the middle. Of the 31 teams out there that you could trade with, I'll bet 15 of them would prefer Shabbat, and I'll bet 16 of them would prefer Chychrun, or vice versa. I think you'd probably find that. And some fans here might find that hard to believe, but I could see that being the case. A lot of people are going to look at it, as you do often, Shabbat, another 4 years at $8 million. Well, I think there are other teams going, hey, that's a good defenseman. We got him locked up for 4 years. Yeah, that's a better deal, right? Other teams are going to go, wait a minute, Chychrun, he's only got a year left, and then we got to sign him to a new deal. Well, you don't know what that new deal is going to be. So that's probably a 50-50 split. The view on the contract situation and the view on which one's the better defenseman for whatever team is shopping.
Right. Well, I think Steve Staios is going to put his blueprint, his stamp on this team come this summer. And that, in fact, that has actually begun already, in that there were some firings. On Saturday, the Senators have fired longtime pro scouts Jim Clark and Rob Murphy. And that was kind of interesting. We're seeing, you know, the wheels starting to grind into motion of this team putting their stamp on this club. And I mean, whether it's fair or not, I mean, I haven't gone through. I'm sure there have been wins for the pro scouting staff here in Ottawa, but I think there have been more losses when you look at examining trades like Mark Stone for Eric Brandstrom, who was a pro. He was in the American Hockey League when they acquired him. You look at Matt Murray's acquisition. You look at Derek Brassard coming in for Mika Zibanejad. There have been a lot of losses here, and I think that if the scouting staff takes heat, it's the pro side all the time. And obviously Steve Staios, you know, after watching this team for an entire year, and people keep asking, you know, why aren't they doing this or why aren't they doing that? They're dragging their feet. They're gathering information, people. They're evaluating. They had to see what's gone on here and watch it in practice. And I think they've seen enough errors over the years in studying things and watching things on the ice where they said, you know what, we need a fresh start in the pro scouting department.
I will be very interested in seeing who the replacements are. Pro scouting is one of the few positions still left in the NHL where it's a buddy. His longtime buddy or recently retired player often is the guy who ends up being the pro scout. With all due respect to our good pal Todd White, pro scout for the Minnesota Wild. No, is it Minnesota or Columbus? It's Minnesota.
Columbus.
Yes, Minnesota. Is it
Columbus?
I thought it was Minnesota Wild. Oh, he played Minnesota. Anyway, whatever. Bottom line is this. No offense to Whitey. Zero experience as a scout. And bang. Okay, you're a pro scout. It is one of those positions where what's the word for nepotism? Buddyism. It's, you know, here's my old pal. He just retired. He's looking for a job in hockey. We'll make him a pro scout. So I'll be very interested to see who they hire to replace these guys. Their prime job, their main job, is to identify players as free agent signing, identify players who can play for American League depth, and identify trade targets and flesh out ideas like that when offers come in. This guy, that guy, who do we want? We're negotiating with this team. What's your book say on their players? Who should we be looking at? So that's the main thrust of what a pro scout does. And I hope it's somebody who can evaluate, because that has been the problem in the past. Whether it's been free agent signings or trades, this team under the Pierre Dorion leadership really dropped a lot of balls and made a lot of mistakes on the pro scouting side.
Yeah. And the people who say, you know, well, it's going to be way, the pro scouting is way easier than the amateur scouting, right? You're evaluating guys who are already in the league, so you have a sense of what they're about. And that's true. It's certainly a lot easier, though not easy, but a lot easier than trying to evaluate what a 17 and an 18-year-old is up to in the junior ranks, whether that will translate to the pros or not. Mistake after mistake is made at the amateur level. Pro scouting, in theory, should be a little easier. But what makes you great at it is identifying the undervalued players that are out there on other teams, right? You look at a guy that's maybe blocked by an amazing top six on a top team. He's a third liner, but you see something. You see something there that, given the power play opportunities, given better line mates, this guy's going to shine for us. And so that's, to me, the art of being a great pro scout.
You hit the nail on the head, Steve, because that is the biggest problem. The biggest mistakes, look at any free agent signings of the past, whatever, where you said, oh my God, was that ever a mistake? And it's either one, they just gave the guy way too much money, or two, they signed a guy and put him in a position that he's not capable of filling. The number of times it's a third or fourth line guy that somebody signs to a big deal because they think he could play in their top six and he's not good enough. That's a very good point on your part. Biggest mistake pro scouting is elevating talent or over-evaluating talent of free agents or trade targets.
Yeah, you think about goaltending again, you know, Matt Murray, you know, he was with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and for whatever reason, that guy just seemed to hit a wall at 25, 26 years old. Some guys age faster than others, I don't know, but he was never the same goalie again, but, you know, he had a superstar team in front of him and looked good as a result and got hot at the right times. But for the Ottawa Senators, the value that Matt Murray had to the Pittsburgh Penguins with this awesome team they have was very high, but his skill set and ability by the time he was 26 and acquired by the Sens just wasn't the same anymore, playing behind a team like the Sens, who were just starting out a rebuild. Moving on, though, I want to ask you about Bobby Ryan. The former senator has mutually agreed to part company with our friend of the show, former TSN reporter Brent Wallace, and former Senator Jason York, friends of the show all. But Bobby Ryan, back on Monday of this past week, made a critical comment to a tweet that was something along the lines of, everybody's watching women's basketball right now. And Bobby Ryan followed this reporter, Megan Shaka, and he replied with something along the lines of, okay, quick, name 5 to 7 women's basketball players, effectively saying, no, not everybody's watching, and no, not everybody's a true fan of women's basketball. And then lots of people chimed in furious response to what Ryan had to say. And then it elevated from Ryan, where he's basically saying that women's sports aren't a thing. And so it was a lot of back and forth. And finally, at the end of the day, the podcast decided to part company with Bobby Ryan. And it was a weird thing to get so worked up about, especially when the numbers just came out for that Iowa-UConn semifinal game. It was ESPN's greatest basketball game ever. Put aside league, NBA, male, female, that female semifinal in Women's March Madness was the most watched basketball game at ESPN ever.
It's weird, eh? Like the way these things happen. And the Chris Johnson comments threw me off too. I don't know what the conflict of interest Chris Johnson has. I look at this. Here's two things that I found interesting about it. First of all, the comments that followed Bobby's tweet were all like, shut up, you're an idiot, knock it off. There's no reason to talk like this. What are you doing? But the comments that followed Wally's tweet that they've parted company were all about this is wrong. How dare you do this? Woke society is killing things. And like, how do you do this? You're not coming in hot anymore. You're lukewarm. It was interesting that it was like almost 100% of the comments on the one tweet were all anti-Bobby, and 100% of the comments on the other tweet were pro-Bobby. Here's my take on the whole thing. I love golf on TV, Steve. I love watching golf. Lots of people don't. I am not going to spend any time trying to convince those people to watch it. You either get it, you enjoy it, or you don't, okay? I don't watch cricket on TV. Don't know the rules, couldn't tell you any of the players, but I'm not going to spend any time disparaging anyone who does. I really don't care. I watch what I watch, I enjoy what I enjoy, you watch what you watch, and enjoy whatever you like. To be this point that I'm going to give up my little gig here with you because I've got to go on to this fight over whatever, it just makes no sense to me. As you said, and as I read in Twitter, is that really the hill you're going to die on? And that's what kind of threw me here. Like, seriously, Bobby, like, knock it off. Nobody cares. And he just doubled down, then he tripled down and just made it worse and worse and worse. And now he's out of a job that some people seem to think that he didn't really care to have anyway, and probably really didn't really need the job either, I guess, right?
Yeah, I don't know what is, I'm sure that, it wasn't a financial thing. I'm sure he's doing it for fun. How into it he was one way or the other, I don't know. But, he made $83 million in his NHL career. So it's, unlike some of the media layoffs we see where you go, man, that guy's got, you got kids and a family and stuff. That's so sad and stuff. In this particular case, it sucks that he's not getting to do this podcast anymore, which I think he liked doing. But financially speaking, things should be pretty good, I think, after $83 million in career earnings. Although there's a lot of taxation on that. I get that, but still fairly set, I would think. So moving on, a couple more things before we go.
Your take on the whole thing, though, Steve. We didn't get your take on the whole thing, though. What are your thoughts? You agree with them? You disagree with them? Should we get into the whole discussion of the matter?
Well, I mean, I think anytime I leave my sort of thought out, it's because it's very similar to yours. It just seemed like an odd thing to go after. The initial comment, I think, if he just sort of gone, okay, I've obviously ruffled some feathers here. I do apologize. I'm not going after, female athletes or female sports in general. I'm talking about, my perception was that, women's sports weren't that popular. Oh, you're telling me the ratings are great? My bad. I think he could have distanced himself at that stage again, but because he dug in, like you said, he doubled down, tripled down, and then moved it from just women's basketball to women's sports later on. And so I'm guessing even in the discussions with his podcast partners, there was some level of remaining defiance continuing along with it instead of saying, hat in hand, my bad. And then maybe apologizing for it. That probably wasn't in the cards, and that's probably why the decision was made. So it was something I think you could have walked back, but it's not a case of like he went out and assaulted someone, and this was something he said on Twitter, and it could have been walked back, but he chose not to, and so what happened happened.
Ladies and gentlemen, rev up your engines and get ready for the deal of a lifetime. Jim K. Ford is proud to announce the 2023 Ford F-150 Clearout Sale, the event you've been waiting for. For a limited time only, Jim K. Ford is offering unbeatable discounts, jaw-dropping financing options, and mind-blowing trade-in deals. Don't miss out on the 2023 Ford F-150 Clearout Sale at Jim K. Ford, 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans, or jimkford.com.
At Jim K. Ford Lincoln, we say yes!
Closing it out, though, with the empty net etiquette of the NHL. A lot of people in the hockey world right now, Greg, are going after the Senators, chuckling, because they think back to that game where Ridley Gregg fires a puck into an empty net at the end of a game with a big old slap shot. And, of course, at that stage of the game, Morgan Rielly came over and cross-checked him in the face. Now people are giggling at the Senators because they had a big problem as time expired. With New Jersey up 4-3, Nico Hischier skated up to net, ran out of time to take a shot on net, and about 3 seconds after the buzzer went, he allowed the puck to slip into the Ottawa net. And so people were saying, as Brady Tkachuk and many other Senators rushed over to shove the guy around a little bit, it's like, oh, that's rich, after what Ridley Gregg did. What did you think?
I laughed as it was happening. I picked up on it immediately, Steve, as it was happening. I went, oh God, here we go. Somebody will not like this. And I was watching closely, and Drake Batherson was the closest guy, and he just kind of skated away. It didn't have any effect on the Drake. He didn't care.
Right.
But no, Brady was there. And I keep going back to the whole idea of the code. Your guy hits my good player. Do we retaliate by kicking the snot out of your guy who hit my guy, or do we retaliate by going after your good player? There's two options there on the retaliation factor, two options under the code as to how I respond to this. And now we've learned that there's two sides of every coin, every argument with the empty netter, right? Did you embarrass them by letting the puck slide into your empty net after the buzzer? Who the hell cares? Like, I don't think the guy cared one way or the other. I don't think he was, oh, I'm going to stick it to the Sens. Like, he just let the puck slide off his stick into an empty net. So what? Like, you know, get mad earlier. Don't give up the first two goals in the game. Show your spunk at the beginning of the game, I think. And I agree with everybody out there who's kind of taking some extra chirps at the Sens over their reaction to this one. It's kind of funny in the end, isn't it?
I mean, I look at it in terms of in both cases. You know, I understand the code exists, and some guys follow it and some guys don't. Brady Tkachuk is old school, so he had a big problem with it. And you see it all the time. You go back to the pregame brawl between the Montreal Canadiens and the Philadelphia Flyers back in the day, where before the game, Claude Lemieux is trying to shove the puck into an empty net at the end of warm-up. Like, who cares? But that was a huge thing that sparked a massive brawl. You don't do that. That's taboo. Or in any game, I defy any game where after the whistle goes and maybe the goalie's out of his crease a little bit, the guy finishes out the play after the whistle during the course of action. That's cause for Armageddon as well. So to me, I guess from the code perspective, I had a bigger issue with what he sure did than what Ridley Gregg did, because Gregg did it in the actual game action. You're allowed to take a slap shot. But I understand in both cases, that's going to ruffle feathers of the other team. There's no doubt. It's just the way it always is. It may be silly, but that's the way it is. I think the only wrong thing that happened here in the whole process is Morgan Riley cross-checking a guy in the face. What the Leafs should have done is exactly what Brady Tkachuk did, and go over and just tell him they didn't appreciate that, shove him around a little bit, and then move on with your life. Same thing with the women's hockey game where the woman with the slap shot did it. The other team came over and gave her a big bump, and that was the end of it. Didn't appreciate it. And then you move on. So I thought that's how I look at it anyway.
I think the biggest thing that we can take out of this, as far as the code goes, is that number one tenet of the code is you got your teammates back. That's the number one thing here. Because let's face it, if Ridley Gregg had done what Heischer did, it was Heischer, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it? Yeah. Then Brady would have had his back. If somebody had done to the Senators what Ridley Gregg did to the Leafs, Brady would have had his back. You know, it would have wanted to kill the guy, right? It's just, you got your guys back, because according to the code, what Ridley Gregg did was wrong, but Brady didn't say a word about it. All the Senators were like, who cares? Or I was chuckling. It was funny. None of them cared because they got their teammates back. Now this happens, same sort of scenario, not quite the same, but same idea where you have to react to the code, and their reaction is what you would expect. It always depends on who's doing it to who. Bottom line, who's doing what to who? That's how we react. That's the code. That's the bottom line for the code.
And the level of offense in the two incidents, they're different in a way, because I liken what Ridley Gregg did to Jose Bautista's bat flip. You're just showing up the other team and they don't like it. And that's what happened there. With Heischer, I think that goes more to the tradition of a lot of these guys throughout their careers have played for crazy goalies, you know, twitchy, superstitious. And I think that goalies don't appreciate pucks crossing their goal line for no reason at all. And so why that ever started, I don't know. But whether you're talking about that Flyer Hab incident, whether you're talking about somebody after the whistle putting the puck into the opposing net, there will always be an issue with that as well. Just different kinds of levels of offense in those cases. Closing it out today, we should mention again, Brady Tkachuk set the NHL record for hits in a game in that loss to the Devils. Man, was he a beauty in that third period, just wrecking guys at every turn, even like launched one Devil player onto the Devil bench. That's you know, certainly one of the best performances I've seen physically from an Ottawa Senator maybe ever. And the stats bear that out as an NHL record, though we should point out that that's since the hit stat was began in 2007-2008. They hadn't tracked it before that. There's one site out there that said Zdeno Chara had 19 in a game once, but we'll call it what it is. They weren't tracking it officially before that. And Brady Tkachuk is, man, he's going to be a beauty if he ever gets to the playoffs.
Just one other caveat we have to put on that, Stephen. The NHL did an audit of the hit statistic. Apparently the NHL does audits of all the statistics every year. And there was one night back in early February, I think it was just before the All-Star game, where overnight while asleep, Brady Tkachuk picked up 22 hits. The NHL went through. Yeah, it's true. The NHL, Cal Clutterbuck picked up like 30. It was crazy that the NHL did a, they used an outside third party who were auditing all the games played this season up to that point of the season and upped everybody's hits overnight. So I think that probably factors into this too. Apparently there were probably guys from 20 years ago or 07, 08, you said was the first year. There were probably guys from that year who think they had 19 or 20. Oh, I did that every night according to today's hits. You know, I think that the way the NHL still hasn't quite mastered exactly, the exact definition of a hit. And don't forget that it's individual guys in each rink. They're off ice officials who track these stats. So it's one of those ones that may always have questions around it. But having said all of that, regardless of what the number is, my God, what a game Brady had. Just a physical presence, a mean son of a gun all game long. You don't like the expression, dragging his team into the fight. He did everything in his power to make sure his team was in that game and having a chance to win. And it was really fun to watch. And it was impressive to watch, impressive to see a young man with such leadership skills, plays the game the right way, physical presence on the ice. It was glorious. I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, it's just a matter of putting it together consistently. Like, you know, there's some nights where Tkachuk doesn't have that intensity and fire, but he has it more consistently than most any other Ottawa Senator. Everybody on that team just has to find a way to put together, you know, longer stretches of consistency in their 60-minute performance. If they can put together half of the intensity that they had in the third period, if they can put that to the starts of their games, they're a playoff team right now, but they haven't been able to do it. Maybe the next coach can get it out of them. Maybe some of the changes that happen out of the in the summertime, that will help too. But you can see that it's there. They're capable of it right now. They just haven't been able to do it from a seasonal performance perspective for long stretches and within games. You can't just dismiss the first half of that hockey game where the Sens did nothing. So we've talked that to death and we'll call it quits right there. Greg, enjoy your the rest of your weekend. And ladies and gentlemen, I invite you to check out a few things. The Sens Nation website is sensnationhockey.com. Check out the Hockey News, proud sponsor of this program. The Hockey News Ottawa is at thn.com/Ottawa. I'd also invite you as well, if you're thinking about starting your own podcast, check out my podcast company and what it's all about and how it can help you at capitalpodcast.ca. Greg, enjoy your day, and we shall talk to you in our next episode.
Thanks, Steve. Have a good one.
Thanks for being with us on the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and review. Share the show with your friends and followers, or become a member on Patreon. Check out our website today at sensnationhockey.com.